Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I hope you all had a fabulous Labor Day weekend. I want to hear all about it, so make sure to tell me what you did in the comments, and we'll read some of them coming up at the end of the show. On the show today, I called out a local feeder for racism against whites, and the response I got was about what you would expect in a city like Seattle. Also, even those who support the climate objectives of the current carbon tax that is raising gas prices are starting to recognize that it is only hurting the poor. We'll discuss. Last week on the show, we talked a lot about the release of dangerous criminals on little to no bail. Well, I hate to say, but over the weekend, we were proven right about what the impacts of that would be. Also, Seattle homicides just surpassed 2022 levels with 4 months left to go in the year. We will discuss. But first, if you have not become a subscriber to the show already, please do so. Help support our mission and our movement to give common sense a comeback. It is only $5 a month, and we sure do appreciate all the support that we get from all you wonderful, fabulous people. All right, so we talked on the show basically all week last week with multiple examples of how judges are just the latest cog in the criminal justice system to truly let down common sense and to throw it out the window. And when we talk about these things, I really believe that the answer and the solutions here are very obvious. And for some reason, whether it's political correctness or just ideology or just failing to just be honest and recognize some of these breakdowns in the criminal justice system that we have to fix in order to restore law and order on our streets. And I really think this pattern and practice of judges looking at someone who comes in their courtroom, who's accused of a violent crime, in some cases accused of a crime where they tried to escape law enforcement, tried to flee from justice, and then the judge says, oh yeah, I'll let you go with no bail. You'll come back for sure. I think, what is possessing you to believe that these people will come back and face the consequences of their actions? And we have two examples from last week. Again, just last week, where we've already been proven right when we spoke out against the no bail that was granted to these two accused criminals. We said, They're going to violate the conditions of their release. We're going to see them hopefully back before a judge, warrants out for their arrest, and this is what's happening. The first one is the guy who lit a fire at a homeless camp in Seattle, the one along Mercer Street. He said it was because he was burning a candle and it got out of control, but people saw him walking away from the scene and didn't call law enforcement or anyone, so was it really an accident? So anyway, he shows up in court. The prosecution says, his name is Paris Alcantara. The prosecution says, hey, he's had 60 warrants in the last 20 years. We don't really think he's going to come back. We think he is a grave danger to the community. So the judge looks at all that and says, no bail. And puts down these stipulations for Paris Alcantara that he can't. One of the stipulations is you can't go back to the encampment. Nicole and I both said, he's going to go back. Of course he's going to go back. So anyway, well, I'm sure it'll come as no shock to you that Paris Alcantara is already back in custody. Because not only did he violate conditions of his release, but he again, on the streets, allegedly posed a serious threat to innocent people. Here's a story from Como News.
Paris Alcantara appeared in court with the help of a cane, but this is the man who police describe as a staggering danger to the community.
This was a unprovoked random attack. The state has community danger concerns.
Alcantara was picked up over the weekend for allegedly chasing a man with an axe or metal pipe through Cascade Park while yelling, I'm going to kill you.
He's not likely to obey any court orders. And he's a danger to the community given this charge and pending charges.
Alcantara was arrested in August for allegedly starting this massive fire at his former homeless encampment on Mercer Street. A municipal court judge ordered Alcantara could be released without bail on those charges and ordered him not to return within 1,000 feet of the Mercer Street camp. Police reports say he's been camping now at Cascade Park, which is 1,050 feet from his former camp.
I hate to laugh, but yeah, 1,050 feet. Remember what the defense attorney said on Alcantara's behalf when he first appeared before a judge? Well, he has multiple places he can go. He can go stay with family. He can go to a city shelter. There's a church that he can go to. And in the same breath, she said he's been homeless for 7 years. So we all knew, anyone with common sense knew, okay, well, if he had all these places to go to that he wanted to go to, that he was sound of mind enough to go to, he would go there. And he didn't. Instead, he went and Como, I think it's funny that Como counted. I like this Jeremy Harris reporter at Como. I was a little like iffy at first. Now I'm like, okay, he's doing a good job. 1,050 feet away from his former encampment. And not only that, he's chasing some guy around a park saying he's going to kill him. And that's the guy that the judge, absent all the evidence that was being presented to him by prosecutors, said, yeah, no bail, go ahead. It's going to be just fine. It's not just fine. And so common sense dictated it wasn't going to be fine. And now we know what happened. Now there's a second example, again from a case we talked about last week. This one was in Pierce County. Remember the young girl who Pierce County deputies, they saw, you know, spotted in a stolen Kia grocery store parking lot. She ends up jumping in a different vehicle, fleeing the scene. Also accused of assaulting deputies. Apparently deputies had opened the driver and passenger doors, try to get her out of the vehicle. She put the car in reverse, backed up with the deputies trapped between the doors and the car. So she goes to court, and what did the judge do? Oh, no, you're fine. No bail. Someone who allegedly stole a vehicle, stole a second vehicle to flee from the scene, allegedly assaulted sheriff's deputies, and a judge thought that this young girl would come back to court no problem. And one of the things the judge ordered is that she had to show up for pretrial, I think it was a diversion program, pretrial services rather. Oh, what's the update? From the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, the defendant failed to report to pretrial services within 24 hours of her release from jail, which is a violation of her conditions of release. A bench warrant has been issued for her arrest. Truly, does this surprise anyone? If you are shocked by this, I just have to know more about the world that you're living in. This is insane, and I bet there is not one single person who watched these stories last week with us who thought that releasing these individuals without any monetary promise to appear was a good idea. This is common sense stuff, yet we have these judges whose actions completely defy common sense, almost to the point where I'm like, I've got conspiracies raging in my mind. Like, are they trying to destroy law and order? Are they actively trying to make our communities less safe? What would be the motivation for something like that? This stuff is ridiculous. And these are just two examples of many stories we talked about last week. Y'all think that that youngster who fled from sheriff's deputies in Thurston County is going to come back to answer to his crimes? Who was released without bail? No! We just told the story in Enumclaw last week of that group of young people who's stealing car after car after car. Police talk to one of their parents who blames the cops, who yells at the cops for arresting their kid for car theft. And then they get no bail and kicked back out on the streets. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. This isn't common sense. This isn't a trajectory that's going to correct itself. Like, come on, if people are a danger to other individuals who are just working hard, minding their own business, there have to be consequences. There have to be actions that our system takes to protect people from them. It's exhausting. It is truly exhausting to have to dwell on these issues and for leaders in charge not to see that this is a profound problem, that they should be speaking out about this complete breakdown, but they don't. Because again, it's their ideology just doesn't allow them to do that. Doesn't allow them to, I don't know, admit the error of their ways. I'm not sure what it is. Apparently, it's not popular for Democrats to come out and say, hey, we have to be harder on criminals. Is that so hard to do? Apparently so, for your base. It's not popular. Okay, speaking of, the city of Seattle had at least 4 more homicides over the weekend, possibly 6. 2 of them are still being investigated as suspicious deaths. But either way, Seattle has officially surpassed its homicide record from 2022. And we have 4 more months left in the year. And again, you know, I talk about, okay, what is the trajectory here? And you've heard city officials blame all measure of things. Remember in 2020, 2021, 2022, they're like, oh, the pandemic, COVID. COVID is causing more people to go out and kill other people. The poverty caused by COVID, which was the result, if that did happen, of lockdowns and mandates that caused people to lose their job and their livelihoods. But you can't blame it on COVID anymore. And there is no possible way that the people in charge in our state can look at what's happening and not see the pattern and the error of their ways. There's no possible way that they can look at this and not tie it back to record low number of police staffing, an inability of officers to be out proactively patrolling neighborhoods, a lack of a desire to proactively patrol because they don't want to put themselves in a situation where they're going to be sacrificed at the altar by politicians. All of this is connected. All of it is connected. I mean, in Seattle, going back 10, 15 years to the agreement with the federal government over police reforms and the anti-police sentiment that that fostered over time. And I'm not saying that the police department was perfect, but what that led to in 2020 with the defunding movement, the anti-police sentiment, the lack of officers because they're fleeing the city. They don't want to work for politicians who don't respect them. The policies and the laws that were passed as a result at local jurisdictions, at the state level, that made it more difficult for police to do their jobs, made it easier for criminals to get away with their crimes. 12 years of Inslee-appointed judges who, once instilled in their positions, are nearly impossible to beat because it's really hard to beat an incumbent judge because there are different political campaigning rules around judgeships. How are we going to undo this? I'll tell you one thing, and I'm going to talk about it at the end of the show in Sanity Check. It's not going to undo itself. This is not something that happened overnight. This has been a slow and steady trajectory. Democrats have had the majority in the House, the Senate, and the governor's office in Olympia for 8 legislative sessions. They've had the governor's office for 40 years. If anyone thinks that we can continue to elect the same people from the same party whose ideologies are only getting more extreme, and who are showing a blind indifference to what I think should be the most important fundamental duty of elected leaders is to help keep people safe. If anyone thinks that that ship is going to right itself without voters taking serious action to put more competent people in those positions, then I don't know what to tell you. And again, I'm going to talk about that more in Sanity Check at the end of the week. But 4 more months in the year, we've already broken the yearly record for homicides in Seattle. A lot of it, by the way, a lot of it, and I failed to mention this in the trajectory of where things are going, a lot of what's happening is tied to drugs. A lot of it. The lower level crimes that people commit in order to fund their habits, the state of mental illness that prolonged drug use can put you in, which makes individuals live on the streets, pose a danger to other people. We just talked about Paris Alcantara chasing some guy around. What was it, Nicole, with a hat, with an axe? What did he chase him around with in Seattle?
I think it was a metal pipe or something.
Yeah. Chasing some around saying you're going to kill them. You really don't think that's the result of mental illness probably brought on by substance abuse? And keep in mind what happened during that period of time. Again, this is all connected. It's important to look at it holistically. The state allowed for drug possession to be decriminalized. You still have cities like Seattle that have not put a drug possession law on the books. Does anybody fail to see the connection between all of this over the past 15 years? And we wonder why we're in this position. And conveniently, they got away about a year or two with blaming it on the pandemic. That's not going to fly anymore. I mean, most of us didn't believe that to begin with. But the further and further that you get away from it, the less and less realistic that sounds. All right. Coming up next, we've been talking about the impacts of the carbon tax, which is, people don't like it called a tax. And by people, I mean the people who passed it don't like it being called a tax because taxes aren't popular. But that's exactly what it does, is it results in higher prices at the pump for you. Well, there was an interesting article in Crosscut, which is a very progressive news publication, where they asked their readers what they think about the impacts of the cap and trade program. And I have to say, I am actually surprised that there is some recognition that that tax is having a disproportionate impact on the poor, which is exactly what progressives say they're against. We'll talk about that coming up next in our Future 42 segment. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. He and his team, there's a lot of services you can get from them that you won't get from a traditional real estate agent. So I highly recommend you checking out sellwithwes.com. But one of them we've been talking about is the Listing Boost Concierge Service. You need to sell your home. Maybe you're low on cash to fix things, or you just got to get out of the state and you're like, I'm just going to sell it as is because I don't have time to deal with it. Well, the Listing Boost Concierge Service can help. Wes and his team can come in, do everything that needs to be done. That's what they did for Susan in Federal Way.
I knew I had to paint. I knew I needed to get new flooring. I needed to get new lighting. I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. Work started immediately. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. Now just think if Susan had just given up and said, I don't have the money to do this, I don't have the time, yeah, you guys wants to flip my house, go ahead and do it. She would have missed out on $200,000 additional dollars to be able to sail into retirement with. So sellwithwest.com. When you go there, start by simply using their home value calculator. See how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. We have been talking a lot about the cap and trade program that was Governor Jay Inslee's baby, that was pushed and passed ultimately by Democrats in Olympia, and the fact that they don't like when we call it a carbon tax. The governor's office explicitly told us it's not a carbon tax. It is. The reason I call it a tax is because that is the result for consumers. It is just as good as a gas tax, because when you go to the pump, we know that it has dramatically raised prices. And I just wanted to check on the latest prices, because if you went anywhere over the Labor Day weekend, you probably noticed that prices are pretty high. In Washington state, the average cost per gallon, certainly it's higher in some locations on the west side of the state, is $5.09. Compare that to the national average of $3.80. So we know that since the cap and trade program and the auction started and went into effect with earnest, we have seen at one point we had the highest gas prices in the nation for the first time. So one of the things I said at the beginning of all this is, look, if Governor Jay Inslee had come out and said, hey, this is going to raise gas prices, I want you to prepare for that. I believe it's the best thing to do to save the earth and the environment. And so I hope you agree. And it's just going to result in a higher cost of the pump. I would have still been opposed to it, but I would have felt much differently about how the governor approached all of this. Because remember, he denied when he was confronted with the reality of what this would do, that it would raise prices at the pump. Up until it took effect, prices went up almost immediately. And then he changed his tune and said, oh, that's just because of the greedy oil and gas companies. And so he refused to acknowledge it until he couldn't refuse to acknowledge it anymore. And that was really bothersome to me. But I thought it was interesting. So Crosscut, which is a Seattle news publication, if you're not familiar, and I would say, I'm not going to paint everyone with a broad brush, but I would say if you're a regular reader to Crosscut, you're probably pretty progressive. I think that's fair to say. They did an article that went up today where they said the headline, readers sound off on Washington's high gas prices. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. I'm curious how Crosscut's readers feel about this, because these are going to be deeply progressive people. The subhead of the article was, the state's cap and trade system is met with skepticism and grudging acceptance as companies pass the program's cost to consumer pocketbooks, which is common sense. Of course, companies are going to pass that along. They're not going to absorb it. But there was this one quote in particular from a reader of theirs that I thought was really interesting, because it's clearly a progressive guy who cares a lot about environmental issues, but he acknowledges what we've been saying about the cap and trade program all along. He told them, quote, I know that gas prices are going to be high, and I support that. In Europe, gas prices have always been high. They always pay more than we do. We have always been the biggest polluter historically, and we have not paid our fair share, and it's time to pay for it now. However, Crosscut writes, this reader, whose neighborhood has ample public transportation options, said he was also concerned that the least privileged would bear the brunt of the costs. He went on to say, I feel for the people who have to commute from Tacoma and have to go to downtown Seattle. That, to me, is the hard part, the inequality of all of this. So many people can't live in an area where they have easy access to public transportation. They're the ones who are going to be paying more than their fair share. And that is a point that we have been making. And I think people, common sense people across the political spectrum, have been making for a long time, which is Democrats in Olympia believe that our tax system is backward, that it disproportionately impacts the low income. And I agree with them, by the way. I disagree with the ways they want to go about and fix it. But one of those disproportionalities is the gas tax. Because a rich person and a poor person, they are going to pay the same price at the pump, but that tax is going to disproportionately take a larger part of a poor person's income than a rich person's income. So the carbon tax, the cap and trade program, the result is the same. So it's passed by a party that says that they don't want a tax system that disproportionately impacts the poor, yet they pass policies like this that disproportionately impact the poor. And they refuse to acknowledge that. And that's why I was pleasantly surprised by one of these cross-cut readers who, again, he's like, I'm fine with high gas prices. I think this is a good policy for the environment. And I care about the environment. So he has a level of honesty and common sense about this that Governor Jay Inslee lacked. Again, Governor Jay Inslee wouldn't acknowledge what was going to happen. And this reader's like, yeah, I get that. However, I also feel bad for people who aren't as fortunate to live where I live or to have the income level that I live, who have to commute from A, B, C, or D outside of Seattle, and who are now really struggling. Man, I mean, if only we had elected leaders who, when they considered policies like this, would really be honest about the impact that it was going to have on people and not brush that aside for the sake of whatever thing is politically palatable to them. So I was happy to see this, and I'm happy to see that there are more robust, more honest conversations happening about the impact of the cap and trade program. And I can only hope that this legislative session, maybe something will be done to try to deal with what have been skyrocketing gas prices as a result of this. But I think the first step is honesty and transparency in the way that we talk about it and in the way that we talk about the impacts of it. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, let's see. The Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle, which I haven't been in for a while, I called them out in a Twitter post over the weekend after one of you sent me something you had seen in a newsletter. And the response I got is, I would say, very predictable. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Ah, arts, culture, racism. Apparently it all goes together. The Fifth Avenue Theater, they put out a notice about something that they called Global Majority Night. So global majority is a term that people started using around, like, more kind of the early woke people, around the early 2000s, basically to flip the idea of, you know, the minority phrase that was used on its head to say, calling people of color in the U.S. or in Europe minorities is very Eurocentric, because actually globally, people of color are the majority. So Fifth Avenue Theater says it's having a global majority night, and I want to read for you what that entails. It says, these performances are dedicated to inviting Black communities, Indigenous communities, and communities of color to experience our shows together. The Fifth Avenue Theater recognizes that our global majority community members have historically been met with elitism and exclusion in our theater. We have to change. We are asking what belonging truly means to us and how we can best be of service to the abundant vibrancy of Seattle. As one initiative, we hope these evenings of theater will be ones where self-identifying members of the community can come together to enjoy storytelling and engage with the performance. And it goes on to say that if you are a person of color, a member of the, quote, global majority, that you get discounted tickets. It goes on to say the Fifth Avenue Theater is happy to welcome guests for Global Majority Night and kindly request that individuals who do not identify as global majority please refrain from using the code on the honor system. So basically they're saying, hey, if you're Black, you can bring your white friend, but only you can use the global majority discount code and your white friend can't. As if any white person would want to show up to a theater and be confronted with racism. Again, it's not reverse racism, it's just racism. So I saw that, I'm like, for the love. And I'm going to talk about some of the issues I have with it in case it's not clear. But I tweeted out, because this was after our show on Thursday, I tweeted out, at Fifth Avenue Theater, might as well put up a sign that says, no whites. I said, keep dividing our communities under the guise of inclusion. Great work. And I mean, if your path to inclusivity goes through exclusivity, then you're doing it wrong and you might be a bigot. And that's the point that I made on Twitter, which is, can you imagine if any theater said, we are having a night where white people get discounted tickets and black people don't? Can you imagine the uproar? I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we have gotten to this point as a society where we are not only leaning into racism, but trying to undo wrongs of the past through racism. Makes no sense. So I'll just say I wasn't particularly surprised this morning when I went to see whether Fifth Avenue Theater had responded to criticism around this, to find that I had been blocked. I am blocked from following the Fifth Avenue Theater or seeing their tweets. How inclusive is that? How typical. How absolutely predictable. That I make a valid point about how they are dividing our communities through something as wonderful as theater and the arts, something that should bring our community together, something that shouldn't be a place where we have political and social feuds, and they're using it explicitly to drive people further apart on the basis of race. What do we talk about? Creating division where no division exists. Am I suggesting that racism isn't a thing anymore? Of course it is, as is evidenced by this. But in a city like Seattle that is so progressive, are we really to believe that if white people went to the theater with black people that we would have some sort of situation? Again, creating division where division doesn't exist. So we had a few of you who I know sent emails to Fifth Avenue just on your own saying, hey, what's going on here? I really disagree with this. So one of our readers sent back the response that they got from the Fifth Avenue Theater. The Fifth Avenue Theater said, hello. The Fifth Avenue Theater and most established regional arts organizations have historically white performers, historically white orchestra, historically white audience, historically white staff, historically white board. People of color in a predominantly white audience are more likely to be asked if it's their first time there. They are more likely to be monitored for laughing too loud. They are under a microscope of audience comments if they arrive late or leave early or make a comment to a fellow theater goer. We have had people of color tell us they don't know if they belong at the Fifth, if they are welcome, if they will be able to relax and enjoy the experience, if they feel they are the other, quote. The theater canon is full of classics that are beloved yet are problematic due to their racist plots and overtones. Representation on stage has been a barrier as well. They concluded, it's not about price. It is about the experience. So we are working to make the experience more relaxing and enjoyable. Let me dissect that just momentarily here. So here you have this theater that says and is acting like it is, you know, this woke bastion where everyone's acceptable and it's going to skirt these historical norms, which I'm not denying that some of these things are true, that in a lot of theaters, historically white performers, orchestra, audience, staff, board, and that goes back to, of course, at the time where there was racial segregation and discrimination and slavery, yeah, that was the case historically. But this is a theater in Seattle in 2023. And then it goes on to say, people of color in a predominantly white audience are more likely to be asked if it's their first time there. They are more likely to be monitored for laughing too loud. They are under a microscope of audience comments if they arrive late or leave early. That to me suggests the Fifth Avenue Theater thinks that if you are a regular attendee that you're treating black people like that. If you go to the Fifth Avenue Theater, you've gone there for years, you are fostering an environment where people of color don't feel welcome. It seems like the Fifth Avenue Theater is saying that of its patrons, does it not? And then they go on to say, we've had people of color tell us they don't know if they belong at the Fifth. If they're welcome, if they'll be able to relax and enjoy the experience. Okay, well, you're the theater. What kind of environment are you fostering? If black people, which I don't believe this has actually ever happened, are coming to you and saying they don't know if they belong there. That sounds like a you problem. That doesn't sound like a white person problem who wants to go to the theater and enjoy The Little Mermaid. That's ridiculous. And so everything, it's not about the price, it's about the experience. So we're working to make the experience more relaxing and enjoyable. Are you saying that the experience at the Fifth Avenue Theater is not relaxing and enjoyable for people of any race and of any color? It sounds like, again, that's a theater problem. So this is just absolutely absurd to me. And Nicole, hello, Nicole. You have reached out to the Fifth Avenue Theater.
I have.
Well, I can't say much to them on social media anymore because I'm blocked. And you made a really good point to them because we've invited them on. Like, if they want to talk about why they think that this is appropriate in 2023 to discriminate against people based on the color of their skin when it comes to something like theater, you can come on. We'll give you a platform to talk about it. But you made a good point about white people who are lower income.
Right. Yeah. I just asked if I said this appears extremely divisive. While the press release claims the theater is aiming to be less exclusive, it quite obviously is excluding low-income white people from attending.
Right. So, and that's like kind of two elements of it. Like, if they had the global majority night, but there wasn't a discount, but they're like, hey, you can come in and we'll, you know, have a night where there's no white people in there, which they wouldn't actually say no whites only, because that would just be screaming out loud what they're actually trying to do. But this is the kind of soft bigotry of low expectations, which I know Dory talked about a lot, which is, what are you assuming, that people of color need discounted tickets?
Right.
And then are you assuming that poor white people don't exist, that there aren't white people who also could benefit from discounted tickets to your theater? Right. I think of all the conversations that we have around diversity, one of the elements that is left out more than any other is economic diversity, is to say, you know, people who are low income. I mean, that spans the spectrum of skin color, and it's just left out so often in conversations about diversity. Have you heard back from them yet? Because you just sent that before the show started.
Yeah, I haven't heard back from them yet.
Not unbelievable.
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, keep us posted. All right, Nicole, thank you. And so we will let you know, certainly, if we hear back from the Fifth Avenue Theater. But this is just racism. I've tried to stop sometime in the past year from calling it reverse racism, because racism against any skin color is just racism, even if it's racism against whites. I'm also looking into, by the way, whether Fifth Avenue Theater benefits from any sort of public funds. I'm quite interested to know. I don't know the answer to that, so we're going to look into it. All right. Coming up next, we'll dip outside of Washington State, talk about some news on the COVID front that I could actually make another segment of Unbelievable. But before that, I spoke to several people. Nicole and I went to the fair, the Washington State Fair. We were helping collect signatures for some initiatives. And then we went to Kane Brown. And I met several people who said they took the First Mark Challenge because they heard about it on the Undivided podcast. We talked to this guy who, he got dropped by his insurance company. Because he got broken. His home got broken into. And there was something else that happened. And his insurance company of 20 years dropped him.
He also had a Kia. He couldn't get insurance on his Kia.
Oh, which is another story that we need to dive into. But he said that he ended up calling First Mark, and they were able to get him reinsured and everything. And he was very happy with the service. So that was a good First Mark victory story. Mike and I took the First Mark challenge in the spring, but kind of for a different reason. It's a great way to see if you can save money on a service you already need. But Mike and I were way underinsured. So we took the First Mark challenge, told him, here's what we got. Here's what we need. They went out, did all the shopping for us for free, came back. Now all of our insurance, home, auto, I mean, you name it, it's housed with First Mark. Here's Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark, talking about the First Mark Challenge.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah, and the First Mark Challenge just takes a little bit of time. And again, everybody needs insurance, right? But we talked about the high gas prices, other ways that your budget is just being stretched to its limit. This is a really good chance. I talked to a woman who's saving $100 a month, $1,200 a year. Her insurance is just as good as it was before. So this is a good opportunity not only to learn a little bit about your current insurance and what you might benefit from, but to save a little money in the process. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. All right, again, we continue the ramp up of the COVID-19 or the latest BA.9.64.XZY.54. It's like a Elon Musk child's name, I don't know, variants. So anyway, apparently we're going back to, if anybody tests positive for COVID, we need to let everyone know. And look, I get it if it's the president of the United States. But Jill Biden tests positive for COVID. I just don't care. I don't care unless she's sick and like hospitalized from COVID-19, or the president is sick and showing symptoms, especially at his age of COVID-19, I don't need an alert from all the news networks when the first lady tests positive for COVID-19. And then ABC News said they were last seen together on Monday, the same day she tested positive for COVID-19. So the president might have it. That's fine. But it's just this like collective freak out. So there's been a couple COVID stories, and I'm going to save the
room.
Although
I will say, how's that vaccine working for you?
Oh, yeah. How's that vaccine? Well, I'll get to that in a moment. Mm-hmm. I've got a trio of COVID stories, and the last one is a real banger, which might explain why Joe Biden, who's probably like quadruple vaxxed, has COVID-19. But anyway, there's also this slow, steady drumbeat of, oh, our masks coming back. Our mandates coming back, and the media pushing and pushing and poking like, do we need mandates? And I wish they'd just shut it. So anyway, Dr. Anthony Fauci, now I assume in retirement, he's a CNN contributor now. Is that it?
Yeah,
shocking.
Apparently.
So he was, and I actually give CNN credit for this. So he was confronted with a study about the efficacy of masks or lack thereof. But he was asked about it in the context of whether Americans would even comply with mask mandates if they were to come back. Here's the exchange.
I would hope that they abide by the recommendation and take into account the risk to themselves and to their families.
Brett Stevens in The Times talked about Cochrane. Put that on the screen. The most rigorous and comprehensive analysis of scientific studies conducted on the efficacy of masks for reducing the spread of respiratory illness, including COVID-19, was published last month. Its conclusions, said Tom Jefferson, the Oxford epidemiologist who is the lead author, were unambiguous. There is just no evidence that they, masks, make any difference, he told the journalist Mayan Damasi, full stop. But wait, hold on. What about the N95 masks as opposed to the lower quality? Surgical or cloth masks makes no difference. None of it, he said. Well, what about the studies that initially persuaded policymakers to impose mask mandates? They were convinced by non-randomized studies, flawed observational studies. How do we get beyond that finding of that particular review?
Yeah, but there are other studies, Michael, that show at an individual level for individual. When you're talking about the effect on the epidemic or the pandemic as a whole, the data are less strong.
Yeah, so basically, we'll find a study that fits what we're telling people to do, essentially. But I also thought it was interesting the way that Smirkomish, is that his name? The way he kind of framed that to Anthony Fauci, which is, how do we get past that? Almost as like he wants... Mm-hmm. He wants Americans to listen to what they say, despite this study that's saying like it doesn't really matter what kind of mask that you wear. And again, I have no issue. If you want to wear a mask, that's fine. I mean, I might kind of snicker if you're walking around outside alone with a mask. I saw a person walking their dog the other day with a mask. You know an experiment, Nicole, I want to do?
What's that?
I want to use my dogs, Lucky and Mackenzie. Mm-hmm. And I want to, my bangs are really in my face today. And I want to... Well, first, I just want to take Lucky out in downtown Seattle with a mask on her. So I'm wearing a mask. The dog's wearing a mask. And I want to see how long it takes for someone to tell me that that's stupid. Okay? And then I want to go to somewhere that's just a bastion of sanity. Like, I don't know, Enumclaw.
Right.
Or somewhere up in rural Snohomish County.
And I want to
do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I want to see how long it takes me for someone to tell me that that's stupid. I feel like in Enumclaw, 1 second. 1 second.
Yeah.
In Seattle, I might walk around all day without someone being like, you know, the dog doesn't need that. Right.
You look ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
You might get a smirk here and there, though.
Yeah. So, you know, Anthony Fauci is still basically telling people, like, we'll find science that fits what we want people to do. And so it's like they're not learning from these past mistakes.
They're not even acknowledging the studies. They're just saying, we'll find something else.
Yeah, it's like, oh, but there are other studies.
Right. So he's not saying, yeah, it's just silly.
It's silly. But here is the real kicker CDC story that, again, like, might explain why Jill Biden has the new COVID variant. So the CDC did a risk assessment on the new SARS-CoV-2 sublineage BA.2.86 and said this. Based on what CDC knows now, existing tests used to detect and medications used to treat COVID-19 appear to be effective with this variant. Goes on to say, BA.2.86 may be more capable of causing infections in people who have previously had COVID-19 or who have received COVID-19 vaccines. So the CDC is saying, If you've had a COVID-19 vaccine, you might actually be more susceptible to getting infected with this new variant of COVID. But they go on to say, to the CDC's credit, that at this point, there's no evidence the variant is causing more severe illness than other variants, which is good because, I mean, I don't like the fear-mongering things. Every time there's a new variant, it's like a super variant. But I just think that's a very interesting note. Maybe that's why Jill Biden has COVID-19.
But again, the studies about what the vaccine is possibly causing, contributing to, other than more cases of COVID, nothing. Silence.
Yes, they won't talk about that. And there's been a lot of studies at this point. And again, you kind of hoped once we got out of the real craziness of the pandemic. And I've said many times that the first 6 months, I was sort of like, I don't know, do what you need to do. I was like, oh, who am I? Mm-hmm. And then after that, there's some stuff where I was like, come on now. Like, I got to walk in this Italian joint with a mask on 3 feet to my table, take it off and sit there for an hour and a half and eat my food.
Or the dentist.
But this doesn't make any sense. It's like any rational American who's not completely obsessed with doing everything their political party tells them to do or tells them to think thought, come on, this is ridiculous. Some people were more brave to say it than other people. But yeah, I would say about after 6 months, I was like, let's be honest. And you just would really wish after the divisiveness of how the pandemic was handled that we could just collectively have a moment to say, okay, let's reassess. Let's move forward a little more skeptically about things that the government is saying, things that the media is saying, and let's just decide, okay, if we're feeling sick today, we stay home, just like we do with a lot of other things. All right, we're going to get to our closing sanity check, but first, questions and comments. And I just really want to know what you guys did. And Matt Gilbert said, went to the rodeo and watched Stetson Wright have a night to remember on the Bulls. I really wanted to see Mike. Love that guy. I know we were there kind of, I would say it was more of a professional, because Nicola was there and I didn't even sit with Nicole. So Mike and I were kind of in and out, but got invited to go and had just a ton of fun. And it wasn't freezing. Sometimes out there in Ellensburg, the rodeo gets real cold at night.
Well, it's either too cold or too hot sometimes. Yeah. And it was like perfect. It was just perfect over there.
It was funny, though, because I had my a makeup trial for my wedding right before the rodeo. So I went to the rodeo like full glam, fake eyelashes. And I was like, oh, man. But passed the rodeo test. I was out there in the sun all day and I went home. I was like, wow, this looks
looking
great.
Good.
Paul Nee says, I hung out at home. Rod Run to the End of the World is this coming weekend. What is that? Is that a Rod Run to the End of the World?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was hoping maybe you knew something about
that. I don't.
It might be a video game because there were some people talking about video games, so...
No idea. Yeah. Lieutenant Dan enjoyed playing Starfield. Hope other gamers, were able to enjoy it. Okay, I don't know. Don Ranger Power says, hope everyone's Labor Day weekend was well, despite the passings of Jimmy Buffett and Smash Mouth lead vocalist Steve Harwell. Yeah, I saw those. Super sad. I'll also note, we took Labor Day off, and I just continue. I mean, I always am grateful for you guys, but it's just nice to be able to, like, continue this labor of love and have you guys support that. And so I was particularly grateful this Labor Day. All right, on bail and the murder raid in Seattle, Jeff Myers says, released without bail, no bail, usually means held in custody with no bail accepted, such as a DV arrest.
That was a good, I think was pointing to our description. So yes, released without bail.
What you mean. Because if somebody's given no bail, that means that they are not allowed to get out or even post bail. So released without bail is probably better. Kathy says, I'm with you. They are destroying our country. Not a conspiracy. It's a fact. Sometimes it makes so little sense that I'm genuinely like, what other explanation is there? What else could be going on? Because I cannot imagine a judge sitting there making these decisions over and over and thinking that they are doing what is right.
Right.
It genuinely baffles me.
It doesn't make any sense. There is no there's no excuse for it.
None. So. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures, I agree with you. Officials need to stop comparing or giving excuses. We need viable, common sense solutions. My heart still breaks for the husband who lost his family. I'm assuming Ina Kwan's husband. Ray said, safety is the most basic and one of the most important responsibilities as an elected official. I agree, and I've said it before. If you're not safe, nothing else matters. If you're dead, none of the other issues that people care about matter. If you're not safe in your home and in your community, it has to be number one. And it is one of the only things that I really think is the government's responsibility. You know, I'm for a limited government, but when it comes to safety, I don't want to be at the whim of vigilante justice. I don't want whatever citizen is involved to be determining my fate, judge, jury, executioner. There is an important role, a critical role the government plays in public safety, a role I do not want in the hands of private citizens. And I'm worried that that's the point that we're getting to, where people are so frustrated over and over, being victimized repeatedly, and they're going to take situations into their own hands in a way that is either justice or not, and then they're going to be thrown in prison for it. And that's just not the society that we want to be living in. Sarah says, drugs, oppression, and mental illness, definitely all serious problems. Terrible that drugs were legalized. It is parents' only hope to get help is to hold them accountable. I have never once heard from a parent whose child is addicted to drugs that didn't want that child to be held accountable for the drug use, that didn't think that an arrest or some sort of legal intervention wasn't going to be helpful because they're at the end of their rope. And then they have politicians who've never dealt with that issue a day in their life who are making decisions that that make it easier for their kid to kill themselves. Ridiculous. Chris says, in Seattle, is Seattle a world-class city yet? Maybe a few more murders will do the trick. And that's the thing. I don't want to hear the comparisons about Chicago, whatever it is. Seattle is supposed to be a world-class city, and it once was a world-class city. When I moved here, I loved downtown Seattle. I spent a lot of time there. I would not do that today. In fact, I have family coming into town for my wedding. Now I'm getting enraged. And I was like, you know, they wanted to spend a couple days in Seattle. And I'm like, no. You got a kid with you, like, let's put you somewhere outside of the city, which is such a bummer because I remember how beautiful it used to be to walk around Pike Place, to go down to the waterfront, how much shopping there used to be in downtown Seattle. Now it's empty, boarded up storefronts. It's absurd. On gas prices, Casey Leonard says, Jay is actively making gas so expensive to push people into EV. He doesn't care about us. He just wants to push a climate change agenda regardless of who it hurts. I'm on a fixed income. I used to get by till the end of the month. Now it's fuel to get to medical appointments or food. Exactly. Look, if we had EVs that were reliable, that were affordable, that were a really easy option for people no matter where you live, if the technology had reached that point where it was basically interchangeable, we'd be having a different conversation. But you are forcing people into a solution that they might not be able to afford, that might not fit their lifestyle based on where they live, and that is a solution that is not viable for them. And you are making it more expensive for them to do what they need to do, to go to work, to go to medical appointments. It's ridiculous. Wow, comments today got me all riled up. Lolly says, Inslee cares about the environment. Why does he allow encampments? That affects the environment. I always laugh at this too. There's this meme that I should find that's like showing some you know, Republican county in Washington. It's just beautiful and pristine. And then it's downtown Seattle and it's like just trash and garbage. And it's like, yeah, but they claim to be the ones who care about the environment.
Right.
Okay. On Fifth Avenue Theater's racism, Matthew Cook says, if a business wants to engage in segregation, I'm all right with that. I personally wouldn't engage with that business, but let the free market determine if that's a good business model. Matt says, poor kids are just as smart as white kids. Joe Biden. It's like one of the worst
quote.
Joe Biden quotes ever. Kate says, clearly the theater knows they are wrong since they're bold enough to block someone who questions them. Yeah, I mean, just ridiculous. And by the way, I did a poll on the live chat. I said, do you think Fifth Avenue's global majority night is racist? 95% said yes. 5% said no. Russell said, our local theater in Centralia had pay what you can nights so that everyone is able to come see the plays they put on. And I love that. Yeah. And I'm actually reminded, we were chatting in the pre-show today about, wasn't there another issue with a theater in a, you know what it was? It was the theater in Issaquah that gave paid internships, but only to black kids. And if you're white, your internship was unpaid because they said basically like, but again, apparently white poor people don't exist and soft bigotry of low expectations. If you're a black kid, you must need financial assistance in order to do an internship.
Right.
Ridiculous. Now, if you were basing that off need, like, hey, if you can, if your family has a certain need threshold, we can make sure that you're compensated so that if you can't work, you know, you can do this. That's different. But basing it on race is stupid. Mm-hmm. Sarah says, good for you to tweet that. They're hypocrites. All should be fair and equal. Any division is evil of any kind. Division where division does not exist. On masks, we've got a lot of good ones today. Just a couple more. On masks, Angie says, every time I see people walking outside with a mask on, I just want to yell at them. When I see their young kids also wearing outside, I want to scream. Don't yell at them. Let them do whatever they want. It's a free world.
But I feel you.
But I feel you. Yes.
Because I want to say, what is making you mask up? Yes, I would really love to have conversations with every person I see driving a car with a mask or walking outside with a mask.
Yeah.
What is the point?
I even feel that way in the grocery store, but then I'm like, okay, worst case scenario, maybe they have a severely immunocompromised loved one or they are. And I'm like, you do what you need to do indoors.
Right. I'll give them the indoors thing, but outside or in the car alone, I don't understand it. And I want to, you know, correct the information that they're given that makes them think that's necessary.
I know.
You can't cannot tell me all. That you forget about it.
Can't save them all. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Mitch explained what Rod Run is. Long Beach Car Show is called Rod Run to the End of the World. It's one of the biggest on the West Coast. Well, little did we know.
Yeah, sounds fun.
Yeah, that does sound fun. All right, great questions and comments today. You guys are on point. See, we give you a long weekend away from Undivided, and you save up all your great commenting for...
Yeah, we met some really cool people. You talked a little bit about going to the Puyallup Fair or the Washington State Fair.
Yes.
But we met a lot of really cool people back there.
We did.
We were in the booth in the back, and there were so many cool people that walked by.
Yeah, we went to help collect signatures for the 6 Let's Go Washington initiatives, mm-hmm. which are like total common sense stuff. And that was the price we had to pay to go to Kane Brown later on in the night. But it was fun, and people were like, why didn't you give us more notice? It's because I just didn't want to cause a situation.
Right. If we could have had the shirts with us, we just weren't ready to sell shirts and hats yet. Otherwise, we would have given you a lot of notification.
Yes, we would have. But we gave half-hour notice, and we still had some people show up and say hi, which was really, really nice. I know people are like, when is the merch store? Because I keep giving false launch dates.
I know, it's coming.
It is coming. I'm not going to throw out another date, but soon. We got our delivery of new t-shirts.
Today.
We're just waiting on a couple other things that we want to add. Here's the reason it's taking so long. Quality control.
It is.
We want to feel and touch the items that we're going to be selling because they represent our brand. So we're like, we need to, you know, we got an order of hats we didn't like. And so we kind of sent them back and we're working with a different company on the hats. And so it's about quality control.
Yes. We're doing it for you.
Although out on the roadways, sorry, I know we're getting to Sandy Dushek. Out on the roadways, I've seen not once, but twice, Undivided Pod bumper stickers.
I love it.
I was like, meh, meh.
Yes, if you have one and you hear honking, that's Brandy.
You know what is also funny? So I have one on my car. It is probably the best thing I've ever done to make sure I'm driving safe. Because every time I want to like, or whatever, or speed, I'm like, oh, I'm representing the business. So I'm just driving like a perfect lady. Not that I wasn't otherwise. But every time tempted to be like, oh, I got to get over quick, I'm like, oh.
You might have got more help on the side of the road when you broke down that time.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. All right, Nicole, thank you very much. And let's get to our closing sanity check, which is a little rant of mine today. Go ahead. I just want to reiterate something I said in the opening of the show, which is this situation that we're dealing with on public safety, it's not going to right itself. It is not going to magically suddenly turn around if there is not substantial change in the state of Washington. It is insane to think that it will, because we have gotten here over time. We have gotten here because of bad decisions made over a long period of time, and it's going to take a while to unwind. But if we can get people in office who prioritize public safety above all else, it is possible. And so that is the message that I think we need to be putting out there, people with common sense, which is if you're concerned about public safety, if you're concerned about, you know, the rise in homicides, the rise in motor vehicle thefts, if you don't feel safe visiting downtown in whatever area of the state that you live in, we cannot passively hope that that's going to change. It has to be active. We have to raise awareness for these issues. And more than anything, we have to vote for change, and we have to vote for something different. And that is really what is going to be driving this show and my votes over the, you know, certainly in November, but also in November 2024, is making sure that people know who the common sense candidates are, who is going to prioritize public safety above all else. And I just think the state needs a course correct. That's how I'm messaging it when I go out and talk to friends who might, you know, be leaning toward voting in the same kind of people in office is, hey, let's just take a pause. Let's take a beat. Let's find someone who can do things a little bit different. We don't need an overhaul. We don't need someone to come in with a sledgehammer. We need a break. We need a course correct. That would benefit our state right now, I mean, to no end. So just something to keep in mind. And Nicole is alerting me to the fact that I have not read an East Side Weight Loss Clinic ad today. So why don't we end the show with that, huh?
I guess we should.
She put it on a whiteboard. She's like, East Side. Thank you for the reminder, Nicole, so we can pay our bills. Right. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I've been talking about how well the program has worked for me. And again, when I'm out at these events, I always hear from people who started the program who are having fantastic results. I'm down more than 35 pounds just in time for my wedding. Feeling great in my wedding dress as well. I'm so excited, by the way, to share pictures once I get married with you guys. I'll do it for subscribers first. We'll have a little sneak peek for subscribers of some good dress photos. It'll be really fun. So if you've been thinking about starting the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan, just schedule a free 15-minute consultation first, because you can ask any questions you want. And you can really decide, okay, hey, this thing that Brandy's been talking about for almost a year now, is it for me or is it not? EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Get in touch with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team, 425-354-3020. They are simply the best, and they'll let you know if the program is right for you or if it's not. All right, that has been our show for today. Thank you, everyone, for being back. I hope you had a wonderful Labor Day and you're feeling relaxed as you head back to labor. Somebody joked with me on Facebook that they're like, yeah, the more I labor, the more the government takes from me. True. All right, we will see you guys back on the live show tomorrow at noon. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. Help us support this mission and this movement and grow it, especially before 2024. We need a whole army of common sense people out there with common sense bumper stickers, wearing our Undivided shirts, spreading the good word. UndividedPod.com. See you back here tomorrow.